Hello, and thank you for joining me today. This is Mindy McNeil, and I am over at Metropolitan State University, and I am speaking with the president, Dr. Janine Davidson. Thank you so much for joining me today, doctor.
Well, thank you for visiting our campus. It's a pleasure.
Dr. Davidson, when I was reading some information, I found out that there was a letter from the U.S. Department of Education, and that confirmed that the university met the criteria for proportion of Latino students and institutional spending on students. But the letter also confirmed that you all will receive a waiver for the third criterion based on student income level. What is the third criterion?
Sure. The third criterion, as I understand it, is about matching funds. And they waived that for us because of the number of our students that are Pell eligible, meaning low income. So they basically said, you have so many low income students, we're not going to require you to match the money.
So I know there's the Pell grant, there's the SEOG grant, and because the grant opportunities include projects such as student support services, faculty development, transfer pipeline development, different things like that, the funding secured will better serve all the roadrunners, is my assumption on this, is what I'm taking. But I do want to know, what is the transfer pipeline development about?
That's correct. The whole point of HSI, getting this status for our university, what makes it so amazing is that it allows us to apply for federal grants for all sorts of things. Almost every single one of those things would benefit all of our students. And the transfer pipeline one is one of those examples. 56% of our students, and many of whom are Hispanic, are transfer students. So they come from other schools. A third of those come from schools like CU or CSU, like big universities, but the rest come from a lot of the community colleges. And it's a surprisingly difficult red tape process to make sure that these classes transfer, right? I mean, if you take a biology class at one school, can it transfer over here? And it's not as simple as you think, because you don't want to set a student up for failure by accidentally thinking that that they have the prep that they need when they don't. And basically, it takes manpower. It takes people or processes. It takes infrastructure to do it and to do it well and to streamline it. And we want to be the place that is, I actually want to be the model for how to do transfer in the country. We have a long way to go because it's so hard. And this will really help us get there.
I was a transfer student because I, you know, community college, and then I transferred over to the state university, and I think that is something, because it was a headache, because sometimes you have to take a class, and you're like, I took this class already.
That's exactly the problem, right? And so you are not alone. Everybody thinks those are the non-traditional students. I have news for you. That's the norm. Mm-hmm. The norm is people start someplace, they stop, they start something else, they have a baby, they stop out. On all the data that's out there to track whether you're a good student school or a bad school, or whether you have a good graduation rate or a bad, it doesn't match any of the realities of what's going on with real students like you, you know? And so we want to be the place where people can bring their weird zigzaggy lives, and we will make it easy for them. And we're really hoping that some of the funding from the federal government will help us get to that vision that I have.
Okay, great. And now, President Jordan launched MSU Denver's HSI obtainment efforts back in 2007 by forming a task force, boosting the recruitment and retention of Latino students. Was getting Latino students to attend MSU difficult in the past?
Well, I don't know that it was difficult so much as there's a couple of things at play here. First of all, as leaders of higher education, as presidents, we do strategic planning all the time. And you're always looking out into the future. What are the trends? And we just did this, we're doing it again. We had a demographer here on campus recently. So, you know, you look back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they looked in the future and they said, you know, what's happening in our state? And one of the things that was happening is this growing population of Latino Hispanic students. We have nearly 60% of the DPS students now are Hispanic. And so then that makes you say, well, if those are gonna be our students, what sort of needs do they have that may be different than the way we're providing services today? So it's all about strategic planning and visioning, right? To your point about, was it hard to get students to come here? Well, there's some disappointing data about higher ed in Colorado right now. Number one is we're 48th in the country for funding per student. Oh, by the way, we're winning the race to the bottom in investment in higher ed in general. Which means it's not surprising that our higher education attainment rates in Colorado are not where they should be. So 66% of Americans, adults, have some sort of higher education credential, an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree. In Colorado, that number is 56%. And for African Americans, it's in the 30s. And for Latinos, it's now at about 28-29%. So all those things, right, says, you know, why aren't Latinos having a higher education attainment rate? Well, maybe it's because this institutions weren't serving them in ways that met their needs. So that was part of the strategy. Let's look into this. Let's see what it is they need. And we're going to do that again. And the answer may be different. You know, looking out to the demographics 20 years from now, maybe a different issue set that we have to address. But that's what we do. That's what we did. And I'll give Dr. Jordan all the credit for getting out that crystal ball, because we're here now. And I think we are known for understanding the needs of this population. And I think that's what Colorado needs right now.
Now, because there is a timeline, you know, 2007, 2012, different things like that, and I've seen the timeline. Was this actually Dr. Jordan's brainchild, or did someone approach Dr. Jordan and say, we need to get this going, or?
We credit Dr. Jordan with this initiative. You know, whether he woke up one morning and had a dream, I don't know, whether it just was emerging, but definitely Dr. Jordan started this ball rolling. As a president, you're constantly thinking about the future and demographics. You don't want to just catch up to the future. You want to create the future, you know. And so I think that's what he was doing. I mean, the demographic trends were pretty darn clear. And, you know, you sit right here in the middle of downtown. DPS is like our biggest feeder. How can we serve those students? So it was, I won't say it was totally obvious, but I think he really latched on to one of the most important trends in Colorado right now.
Dr. Marquez had said, in submitting grant proposals, we'll be looking at writing grants that reflect best practices and at what is most beneficial for our students. So, in your opinion, what do you feel is most beneficial to the student population, both Hispanic and non-Hispanic?
Right. So, again, our population, some 50% of our students are first in their family ever to go to college. And that's definitely the case among our Latino population. And what that basically means is they need services that you know, might not have to have it at an elite selective university where kids grow up with parents and grandparents who have gone to college and you're going to go home and run the daddy's business, right? That's not who our students are, okay? Our students need a little more support with transfer process. If they're transfer students, they need advising services, and those things cost money. They need sometimes mental health services, and so we call those wraparound student services. And it's super important. We know that where we're able to provide a good suite of wraparound student services, the retention rates and the graduation rates are exponentially higher. And the other thing we want to do here is add to that suite of advising, academic advising, financial aid advising. You know how complex the financial aid process is? It's insane. They need help with that. But also career advising. You know, how do you tap your passion and find out what you want to do in life? And then how do we help you place you in internships and apprenticeships and ultimately in a job, in a career that is satisfying. So all those things, they apply to everybody. They definitely apply to our Latino population. We talk a lot about how we can best serve our students. And, you know, there's a lot of research on what they call the sense of belonging. Now imagine if you were the first in your family ever to go to college, and especially if you were a minority student. You show up on campus and everybody looks different than you, and they all seem to know what they're doing, even though they probably don't, but they seem to know what they're doing. There's this mood music in your head that constantly goes off that says, you know, maybe I shouldn't be here, maybe I don't belong here, right? Well, we call that sense of belonging. And we know that if we can enhance a student's sense of belonging, they will, again, be more likely to stay in school and thrive. And so that's what we try to do. With our first-gen students, for instance, we started an initiative a couple years ago, or when I first got here, where there were a lot of faculty and staff that were also first-gen. So they would sometimes wear T-shirts, and they have these buttons that say, I'm first-gen, too. It's super cool. And you can just, you know, then you can walk up and go, what the heck is going on with this? And you can ask these questions that you don't think that, you know, anybody understands. And then you look across this campus and you realize how many of these successful people actually started off just like you. It's super important.
It gives somebody something to aspire to. If they can do it, I can do it as well. Now, in 2012, there was a new tuition structure for qualified resident students, including undocumented students. Was this put into place to motivate Hispanic students to enroll at MSU?
I wasn't here when that happened, but I will tell you that when I saw that MSU Denver had taken the lead on that policy, it was one of the things that attracted me to the university. The leadership of this university, Dr. Jordan and the Board of Trustees, were incredibly progressive on this issue set. I won't say it was, you know, part and parcel of the HSI strategy. I think it was a collective approach of how do we do the right thing to serve the most Coloradans. And So they said, well, we're going to give in-state tuition to these students, right? This is a trend that's happening here. It was very controversial. And what I didn't realize, and that, you know, now, is that it wasn't just something happening on this campus. The leadership of this university were the leaders behind the asset bill that then made it law across Colorado that these students would get in-state tuition. So it's a pretty amazing thing. And, you know, when I came out here to interview for this job, you could just tell how proud the trustees were that they had done this, and how hard a fight it was. And so MSU Denver is the leader. It's pretty amazing.
We talked earlier about the May 9th celebration, the community celebration. What exactly is going to be happening? Is this just open to the whole public, or is it like a all-day party? Well, and you know, campus students, they love to party. So what exactly is going to be happening?
We're excited about this. This is May 9th, 4 o'clock on our 9th Street Park. We'll be outside. Hopefully the weather will be like it is today. And we have an invitation out to the mayor and the governor, both of whom have expressed interest in coming. And I think it's going to be a big celebration. It's going to be super fun.
You know, we just talked a moment ago about some of the things that piqued your interest in coming here. But you had a pretty interesting career before you came here. You were on a tactical C-130. You were the first woman to fly the Air Force's tactical C-130. What kind of plane is that? What is that? For somebody who doesn't know, and that include myself.
A C-130 is a large cargo plane with propellers, sort of the workhorse of the Jeep of the Air Force, of many Air Forces around the world. The tactical C-130 is the one that flies in formation, drops troops behind enemy lines, that kind of thing. So they opened all those sorts of jobs to women in the early 90s, and I had the, I don't know, fortune or misfortune to be the first one in the Air Force, and therefore the only woman in my squadron for a while. But that's really changed. There are no more restrictions on any jobs in the military for women at all, to include infantry, Navy SEALs, all that stuff. So it's been a long time.
You broke some great ground there.
Well, you know, I was just in the right place at the right time, I guess.
So my other question is, okay, you're in the military, but you came over to education. What made you make that switch over to education?
Well, kind of like our students, I have it a zigzaggy path. Even in the Air Force, I had one foot in education. My second assignment in the Air Force, I was teaching at the Air Force Academy. And then when I got out of the Air Force, I got my PhD, and I was teaching at Davidson College and then George Mason, and then I was sort of in and out. I didn't go back into the Pentagon until as a civilian, as a political appointee, until the Obama administration. And that's where I was when Trump got elected. And so that was the perfect timing, because MSU Denver was looking for a president. So here I am.
So, Dr. Davidson, you know, as a parent, or if I am a student who is a parent to maybe small children, how does the HSI affect me?
Well, the HSI status simply allows us to serve all of our students even better, right? Not only that, but I think the reputation that we are a friendly place for people of all ethnicities, I think it's one of the things that really attracts people here. And the HSI status, you know, it just highlights one of our populations, probably one of the biggest, 26%, 74% of the rest of our students are not. And what that means is we're a place where people get to meet other people from other places and other backgrounds. It's multicultural, and we're constantly working on what that means, right? So students get to challenge themselves. They get to meet people with different backgrounds, and they get to, you know, engage with them and learn from them. The other thing about MSU Denver is anybody can come here. By law, we are a modified open access institution, which means if you have a high school degree or GED, you can start here. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. I meet people, I mean, even yesterday I met this woman who just got hired at Lockheed Martin. She finished up in our aerospace program. And she said, I said, why did you pick MSU Denver? And she basically said, well, I wasn't very motivated in high school. I didn't have very good grades. And like, well, this is the only place I got in. And then she said, and then I realized how amazing it was. And she got super good grades, because now all of a sudden she's found or tapped her passion. And the thing is like, if MSU Denver didn't exist, where would she have gotten that start? Where would she have been able to do that? So you have to have places like this. Not everybody has, you know, the ability to take those expensive Gucci SAT prep classes. Not everybody goes to those schools with all the AP courses. And, you know, we know that our K-12 system in America is not equal. So MSU Denver is that equalizer. It's, you know, really is a place for the American dream. So everyone should come here. It's awesome.
pretty much levels the playing field, so to speak.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
You know, we've been talking about grants, we've been talking about, you know, money, we've been talking about people, everything else, but the working person, sometimes they think, I can't go to college because it's just out of my league. I can't afford a grant. I can't get a scholarship. And they shy away from that. But MSU has some pretty affordable rates when it comes to tuition. Is that correct?
That's true. We are the most affordable institution of higher education in the state of Colorado. And also, we have a mindset to accommodate people who are of low income or who are working. You know, 70% of Americans in college are working at least 30 hours a week. And college has gotten more expensive because government has disinvested in public higher education. In the year 2000, the cost of education was subsidized by the state in Colorado and elsewhere at the rate of about 70%, which meant tuition and scholarships only had to make up 30%. Now it is the exact opposite. In Colorado, the cost of higher education is only paid about 25-28% by the state. So the rest of that, 75%, has to come from somewhere else, tuition, fees, scholarships. And so that has created this burden on students that we work every single day to, you know, not have the students have that burden. So we have scholarships, there's financial aid. And so people who think that college is out of reach, they're just looking at the sticker price, right? They need to come in and talk to a financial counselor and have them chart out a course for them because it is affordable. And I'll say one other thing. Just because we're the least expensive university in Colorado doesn't mean that we have sacrificed quality. And I'll tell you, what's so amazing about MSU Denver, they are focused on students. So that means that the experience that you get in the classroom, the faculty are so dedicated to the students. Some of the big universities where I used to teach, the faculty's main focus is their own research, which is really an important thing for America, but it isn't about the undergraduate experience. MSU Denver's all about that undergraduate experience. And so it's about the highest value, smartest choice, biggest ROI you can make in Colorado.
Everything's starting to fall into place now. You've got the celebration. Money's going to be starting to come in. You've got students. What's the mission? What's the focus going forward?
Sure. I would say that our gaining HSI status, it's just another step or another indication, another reflection of what we do here, which is we serve all students, right? And like I said, we are a modified open access institution, which means, you know, low income, minority, diverse. That's what we're here for. And so the HSI thing just, I think, is an example of that. It's one of our best examples. It's one of our most recent examples. But there's more to come. We often talk about MSU Denver as, you know, the place where you can have a second chance, you know. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that it's actually one of the smartest places you can start, one of the smartest places that you can choose. We have an honors program here. We have a lot of students from the Front Range area that choose MSU Denver, not just because it's inexpensive and not just because they could get in, but because they love the fact that it's multicultural. They love the fact that we have programs like you can study beer here. You can make, you know, beer labs, and you can study aviation and become a pilot. We have industrial design, as well as we really are dedicated to matching those kinds of programs with humanities and social sciences. So it's not just a trade school, right? So you can come here and do those things, but also take high quality philosophy courses and history courses. And I think that word is starting to get out. And so we have all kinds of students here. It's really one of the smartest choices that people can make, and people are starting to recognize that.
Very well-rounded campus.
Yes, indeed.
Lastly, Dr. Davison, I was doing some research and I found this quote by you, and it said, "When MSU Denver is at its best, our extraordinary faculty and staff provide our students with the support, courage, and tools they need to overcome whatever roadblocks stand in their way." Is that a thought, philosophy, what is that from you?
Sure. I mean, before I even came here, everywhere I went, when I talked to people about MSU or alums that have come here, one of the recurring themes I would hear from alums was, you know, MSU Denver changed my life. Well, how did it change your life? You know, a lot of people say that about college. And it always came down to, like, there was some faculty member or some administrator. Everybody's focused on helping them find their way and get through this program. Not like, you know, a school where it's sort of hey, you know, it's tough here, and there's a big washout rate, and they take pride in that, you know. Yes, my physics class is hard, and, you know, 1/3 of you aren't going to make it, and there's this sort of, you know, badge of honor about that. We are the opposite, because if students aren't showing up to class or something here, it's probably not because they're hungover from a frat party. If the average age of our student is 26, it might be because they had babysitting issues. It might be because they got a flat tire or they had to work. And so our student, our faculty and our administrators and our counselors are all focused on that reality. And so they'll reach out to a student and they'll say, hey, what's going on? We even have an emergency fund in case you got that flat tire and you think you can't pay for tuition or whatever it is. And so it's kind of the ethos. It's one of the, part of what makes MSU Denver student focused.
And honestly, that's the way it should be. So thank you very much, Dr. Davison. I appreciate your time.
Well, it's my pleasure.